Good morning, everyone. As most of you know, this is my first appearance in a few weeks. I was with a lot of you and others in Israel for the month of January. I haven't given a satsang on that experience, so I'll bring some of it in. Well, I may bring some of it in today. I never really quite know what's going to happen, but I will. Because it was an experience worth sharing. And it also happens to be exactly what our reading is about today, which is receptivity and attunement, and all of it together just makes the whole story of the spiritual path. I know that Shanti has spoken a couple of times since we came back, and the 40 or so others from this community have certainly shared their experiences, so it's not like I have to start from scratch. So I'll just sort of give you my small perspective on this. Some of you may know that the reason that we traveled to Israel this in January was because a year prior to this, when I was traveling on my own there as a pilgrim, meaning not as a leader, I was part of a group. I had this in the middle of that trip. This is what happened. I was traveling with a group from Italy, and also on that tour were Ishani and Aryavan. Ishani is an American girl, but she has an Israeli Jewish background. And as a consequence, even as a member of Ananda for many years, has not really felt inclined to embrace the life of Jesus. Part of it is that India was enough, master. There's our five gurus on our altar, and we can barely keep in tune with one or two of them. And so one doesn't necessarily feel you have to cover all the bases. Also, with a Jewish-Israeli background, Jesus isn't the first thing you think of. In fact, often he's the last thing you think of. But on that tour, since it was Italian-sponsored, and almost everyone on the tour was an Italian Catholic, there was a very strong assumption of both familiarity and devotion to Jesus, because the majority of people in the group had grown up with it. So I spent a lot of time on that trip sort of filling in the blanks for Ishani, you know, as to who was Peter, and is John the Baptist the same as John the Apostle, and now how did Jesus die? You know, I mean, really, really basic stuff. And it occurred to me that because of my own particular interest, which I was also raised in a Jewish family, but it was cultural rather than religious. But once I took responsibility for this Ananda expression, which is now since 1987, long time ago, and I had to figure out how to run a church when Jesus was on the altar, so I had to like figure out what is Easter, what is Christmas, how does this all work together? But of course, everything is karma. So there was always in my heart this passionate interest in Jesus, which I have no doubt is reincarnation, especially after having now been to Israel 4 times in a relatively short period of time. And honestly, I've rarely had such a sense of geographic connection. So I don't know whether it's the fact that growing up as a child, among the brilliant fundraising efforts of the country of Israel in 70 years, they're only 70 years old as a country, they fundraised a great deal in America, was to persuade people to donate money to plant a tree in Israel. So my Zionist, New York City Zionist Jewish grandparents, for many, many years, my birthday present was always a little certificate that said, a tree has been planted for you in Israel. You know, as a 6-year-old child, oh, just what I wanted, a tree in Israel. You know, when Shanti and I were traveling together there, it was like, where are all our trees, you know? So there's a modern component to the body I live in now, but the real power of it is the living presence, which is quite something. But also just the sense of, this is a real story. And I had this inspiration that it came to me more like an instruction, that there's an East-West reality that's trying to happen in the world today. There's dual forces that are competing for attention. on the planet. One is trying to just fragment it into little hate groups that just tell terrible things, say terrible things about each other and try to tear down everything that's good. That's a real strong force. And the other force is this force that realizing we're all children of God and we all belong together. And of course, Master incarnated at this particular time in order to bring forth the positive, the love, the unity. And part of it is represented by him being born in India, but then traveling to America, by him saying, as we say every week in our Festival of Light, Jesus appeared to the great Master Babaji. Those of you who come often to our Sunday service hear that. Those who are new will hear it in a few moments. Jesus appeared to the high in the Himalayas. Jesus appeared to the great Master Babaji. I say that all the time. I read it. I've read it, you know, almost every Sunday for more than 40 years almost. What the heck does that mean? Jesus appeared to Babaji? In Autobiography of a Yogi, it says Jesus and Babaji, one working with a body, one working without a body. Jesus died, resurrected his body, but then gave it up. Whereas Babaji is a deathless master in the Himalayas, and even today inhabits a physical body that by his yogic powers he keeps from aging. What does any of that actually mean? Except that we are in the middle of a reality that we just barely comprehend. And that we are all just tiny droplets on this cosmic ocean of constant expansion of consciousness that we can experience whether we understand it or not. That we can paste words onto that. Well, they used to make more sense to me. I mean, that's a weird way to put it. But I used to say a lot of these things much more glibly, as if I actually knew what I was talking about. The more I live on the spiritual path, the more I realize that even the smallest words are barely incomprehensible to me. Unconditional love. Perfect attunement. Absolute surrender. Those are just little, you know, there's a couple of words there. But like, what does that actually mean? And every so often, something happens in our lives where it becomes more than just a conversation. It becomes something that's closer to a direct perception. Now, pilgrimage has been a divine practice, you know, as long as there have been human beings on the planet. Just pilgrimage is what we do. We do it either as an austerity, which is that, you know, when you had to walk for months or you had to risk your life to do it, it would be some like great sacrifice that you would take on to prove your devotion. Nowadays, you buy an airplane ticket and the guide meets you at the airport on an air-conditioned bus, you know, sometime in a limo, takes you to a nice hotel. But there's still a level of austerity to it, because the austerity is that we are going to commit ourselves for a period of time to think only about God and to be someplace that we aren't usually, in order to try, at least, and by the grace of God at times, to have an actual true perception of another reality. Now, let me find where I was. I was going to go back because I didn't finish the thread about the instruction I received when I was in Israel more than a year ago, which was there is another half of the east-west side of things, which is that Jesus represents like sort of the western side of Sanatana Dharma. And when Master would talk about it, when Yogananda would talk about it, he would talk about through the Kali Yuga, the darker ages, the material ages that we're just coming out of, mankind's consciousness, not saints, and not really even serious devotees, but the vibration of the planet as a whole becomes narrower and materialistic, and contradicting realities cannot be held together. They have to be separated. So basically, Jesus took responsibility for the West, and Babaji took responsibility for the East, and they both took us through this dark age. And so West became institutionalized and primarily Christian, which is also Judaism, but primarily that. And India kept Sanat and Dharma alive in its own way, but much of the esoterica was taken to the Himalayas and hidden until Lahiri Mahashaya brought Kriya back out. But now that separation, because we're in a higher age, we can hold contradictory realities and we can go forward in a new way. I remember at a certain point I said to Swamiji, us Westerners have had to embrace all this strange India stuff. You know, the god with the elephant head and the, you know, the woman with the garland of skulls and the four arms. It's like we've had to stretch our minds a little bit to take in this weird stuff. Don't you think the Indians can figure out Jesus? I mean, it seems like a fairly small thing to ask. You know, of course, England was not exactly a respectful friend of the Indian people, and Jesus' name was invoked a lot in justifying a great many things that were done to people whose skin wasn't as white as mine. So, you know, Jesus kind of got tarred with the same brush. And that's, you know, our prejudice is against paganism and superstition, our meaning the Western world, chaos and disorder. Swami Kriyananda remarked when he was visiting in Rishikesh, he was in seclusion there, and he was talking about the inclination when you travel to make comparisons. You know, this is how it should be done. And he was talking about walking through this. I mean, India has changed a great deal. This was at least 20 years ago, 25 years ago. He was walking through the streets of Rishikesh, and he thought to himself, you know, they could keep these streets a little cleaner. And then he thought, gosh, if you put out all that energy to have clean streets, what you have is clean streets. Like, what are you going to do with clean streets? It's just clean streets. Like, who cares, really? I mean, you think of Sri Yukteswar when he was sitting on his little ratty rug in his ashram, and Yogananda was visiting in 1935, and he says to his guru, I'll buy you a new rug. And Yukteswar says, why? Like, then I'd have, like, a new rug. What do I need with a new rug? I have infinite consciousness. Who cares about rugs? Who cares about clean streets? You know, this is the way our minds work. We get these little narrow ideas of things. But that isn't what takes us to God. What takes us to God is to realize it's all a dream. And the only thing that matters is who I am inside myself. And then if I feel inspired to clean the streets, let's clean the streets. If I want a new rug, okay. But what's really and only real is this direct perception of who and what we really are. And somehow I felt called by God to try to bring a whole crowd of Ananda devotees from India to Israel and talk to them about Jesus. And it just turned out to be a red hot idea, you know? So we had 40 people from India, the same as we had 40 people from America. Well, two Indians from New Zealand, Kavita and her husband Arun, and a token American from New York, Colleen, and one Brazilian, right, on this trip. And we walked around Israel for the second time for me, because we did these trips in sequence there, and I just talked about Jesus. That's what we did. But we didn't just talk about Jesus. We walked with Jesus. We lived with Jesus. And I'll speak for myself, for this whole month of experience, I didn't realize till we got back to the airport, as it happened, Colleen Caldwell, who's our center leader, one of the center leaders in New York City, she and I were on the same flight back from Israel. Thank God, I'm not even sure I could have gotten here otherwise, although I suspect I could have found the other half of my brain if I had needed it, because I'm wandering around the airport, we're going around the airport to get back on the plane. I mean, like the very concept, like she's taking us to our gate, and it crosses my mind, how does she know what our gate is? You know, like just really, I actually thought, how does she know what gate we're supposed to go to? Then a piece of me also realizes that's not hard information to get. But it just came clear to me, you know, how much energy we waste having clean streets. And just how much energy we spend keeping the trivial in order and ignoring the only reason we're born. You know, the life of Christ, by any measurement, it's a dramatic story. Swamiji made the remark to me once. He said when he was thinking about writing about Master, he lamented a little bit. He said that Master's life is really not very dramatic. I mean, you can make dramatic things happen. There were miracles and so on. But he was born into a privileged family. His father took really good care of him. He met lots of saints. He came to America. His father wrote him big checks for a long time. You know, he founded a work in Los Angeles. And then he died. You know, Jesus was crucified. And, you know, it was just like so much happened. And then Jesus resurrected and just like, oh my gosh. And Swami remarked once that, you know, Jesus' teaching really in so many ways was his life, whereas Master's teaching was his teaching. And of course, he personified it and carries the capacity for attunement, which shifts it from words into experience. But Jesus' story was his life. And Swami once said to me, and I was so touched by this, he said something like, and he said it like this, it's the greatest story ever told. And sometimes I would say things that were stupid to Swami. And I said something like, because, you know, I said, well, that's not a very original statement. You know, the greatest story ever told is like, that's how they call it. But he didn't relate to me on the level that I was relating. Just like a child, he just turned to me and he said, well, don't you think it is? And I had to stop and think, yeah, actually, it is quite a story, isn't it? I mean, Master tells the story of Lahiri resurrecting or Sri Yukteswar resurrecting, which are pretty darn impressive stories. But still, there's something about what happened to Christ that is still, if we attune ourselves, and this is what a little bit of our reading is about today, and of course, it's easier to attune yourself, or it's harder not to attune yourself when you're, you know, climbing these steep steps, which is now inside this huge old church, but you're walking up the steep steps of the hill of Golgotha, where Jesus was nailed onto the cross, and then the cross was lifted up and, you know, stuck into the rocks. I mean, now it's hundreds of years later. Nothing looks anything like it looked. But in the end of it, you can put your hand down in this little hole with all this stuff around it, and you put your hand on this rock. And it's said to be the rock. And Master visited all these places in 1935, and he pronounced, and the phrase he actually used was, they're almost all authentic. But I have understood that also from Swami's confirmation, that everything that matters is authentic. And Master makes this other statement, which is very important. Any place a master has ever been, he says his vibrations are there for eternity. But here's another side to that. Any place a master has ever been, that's infinite. Infinity. Which means where two or more are gathered in thy name, there am I in the midst of them, Jesus said. And Master took that even farther. Where two or more of your own thoughts are gathered in your own head. Now, I never have a time when there aren't at least two of them gathered in my own head. Two is a relief, oh my God, you know. But there is that or more. There am I in the midst of them. It's a very, very esoteric phrase. What that means is we are never separated because there I am. But we're very dense and we're very restless. And we love to distract ourselves. So what pilgrimage does is it cuts you out of the fabric of your life. It just takes a big scissor and it just lifts you out of the fabric of your life and puts you somewhere else. You know, we used to tell our India pilgrimage when we go, I said, you have one job, which is every so often you have to put your stuff in your suitcase and then you have to push your suitcase out in the hall. On this trip, sometimes you had to actually carry your suitcase downstairs, because we didn't have as many people helping us as you have in India. But you just have to push it out. And then the rest of the time, you have to remember that you are always in the presence of God. And therefore, why would I be concerned about anything? Now, of course, that's much easier to do if you've cut yourself out of the fabric of your life and you don't even have to feed yourself. Well, you do have to lift the spoon, but you don't have to create anything that feeds you. You just put it over here. And the rest of the time, we walk in the footsteps of the divine. And what happens is, you see, with a very intensely concentrated period of practice, it's like seclusion, it's like a long meditation. It's not that different than coming to Sunday service, it's just more intense. Why do you all come every Sunday? Many of you come every week. Or why do you ever come here? Because it cuts you out of the fabric of your normally distracted life, and for a period of time, you're just sitting here staring at that. And if you're not looking at the masters, you've closed your eyes and the image is still right there in front of you, isn't it? And it changes it from words to experience. And then when we know it, no longer as a theory, but we have a point of contrast. The problem with most of the time is that we think that this is good, what we're experiencing. Where was it? Something that was read today. It must have been, I can't even remember. Maybe it was when Helen was reading. But we're thinking about the pleasures, the money, the power of this world, and it feels good to us. And it may be the best that we know. But when something more touches us, then somewhere this begins to lose its power. And attunement is just always remembering that more. Because if you're always remembering that reality, then this reality loses its attractiveness. That sounds so simple, doesn't it? But you see, this is why in that reading, Master said, many of you will leave the path, but it needn't happen if you stay in tune. That sounds like almost superstitious. You don't really quite know like what he's talking about. But staying in tune is smriti. Smriti is divine memory. To stay in tune means to remember. And to stay in tune means to do those things deliberately that will cause you to not forget, which is to say that will help you to remember. So I know even everywhere in the world today, well, I'm laughing for a moment because many years ago I was in the presence of a different teacher. I think I was a guest speaker at somebody else's ashram, and I was in the presence of the teacher, and the teacher was beginning to give a program about meditation. And he was giving it in this very sort of lovely, sort of soft voice. And he asked, sit up straight in these chairs. He said, the difficulty is the chairs you are sitting in, he said it like this, the chairs you are sitting in are part of the international conspiracy against proper sitting and breathing. And of course it was true, because they, you know, you just couldn't sit properly or breathe. These chairs, we tested so many chairs because we would not have chairs that were part of that international conspiracy. Absolutely not. So we all tested these to see if they work. But there is an international conspiracy that's even worse than that. There's a satanic, cosmic conspiracy to make us forget. Fortunately, we have friends in high places who are also working just as hard to help us remember. But we get to hang out right in the middle with free will all the time. And attunement is to constantly make that choice that will help us to remember. It's not really any more complicated than that. How am I spending my time? How am I spending my money? What is my home atmosphere like? What music do I listen to? How do I spend my spare time? It doesn't mean that one never, you know, lets down one's guard, but cumulatively. How am I spending my time? What am I thinking about? Who are my best friends? Where do I turn when I have difficulty? To whom do I confide? You know, when two or more are gathered together in my head, do I remember that the Lord is there with me? Or do I just lose myself in this? And there is an international cosmic conspiracy to make you forget. Here we are. In Israel, we're in the King Solomon Hotel, you know. Everything is the King Solomon this, or the King David that, or the, you know, it's a very old place, Israel. And I become aware of the fact, I mean, we ate breakfast and dinner in this room for lots of times, that there's just this constant sound going on in that dining room, and I finally figured out There was a loop tape of something. I'm having a hard time using the word music. But it was sound that was imitating music. And there was an occasional something that had some melody, but the primary sound of it was this repeating thump. Just like, really, like somebody was banging on the wall. And it played all the time. Fortunately, Israelis are very exuberant. So there was so much noise in the dining room that only occasionally did you realize that there was the background thump. But you know, I'm just standing there thinking, like, who thinks this is a good idea? You know, that just if there could be possibly a moment of pause, let's fill it with somebody banging on the wall. But all of this is actually the good news, because the effort required to transcend that force makes us into saints. So we all think it would be better to be born in a high yuga, but in a high yuga, where everything is just easy and where, as Swami put it, people like us are in charge, it's also easy to become quite lazy. And then we'll leave the path because we don't have that attunement, because we don't have to work at it. We don't have to constantly ask myself, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I here? What is real? Why am I so anxious? You know? I ask myself over and over again, you know, you're dealing with, I had to figure out how to introduce this group of Indian people who are now, I mean, just my friends, my devotee friends from India, like how to really tell them this whole story. And we had to do it in the context of going here and going there. We had to do it in the context of the weather and the time frame and the jet lag and the, you know, just there were 100 things to consider. So I just, let's throw them in the deep end. We're in Jerusalem. Let's go to the best place in Jerusalem, which is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which includes the place where Jesus was crucified, where his body was anointed, and where his body was laid in the tomb and from which he resurrected. And just, let's just do it. I mean, it's the greatest story ever told. You know, it's quite something. So for the last month, because when we were in Jerusalem, which was a great deal of the last month, most mornings, unless I didn't want to get up early enough, we would walk over and just spend a couple of hours in that church. So everything that happened was measured against Jesus being crucified. You know, like, oh, there's nothing I like for dinner. Well, compare that to being crucified. You know, it's a little cold today. Well, let's compare that to having all your clothes taken off and being crucified. And in a weird way, because I'm a bit of an extremist anyway, it was absolutely terrific. You know, it was really hard to find something to worry about compared to, and that's attunement. You know, it really is. It's like, what reality am I going to live in? Who do I want to be? Because what we do, our future is not determined in great dramatic moments. Our future is determined minute by minute. You know, habits are now, just like that. Habits are now. What am I doing? What am I comparing things to? What am I attuned to? And, you know, we have to run our lives. We don't usually get to cut our lives out of the fabric like that. I mean, we don't get to cut ourselves from the fabric of our lives. We have to cook, we have to clean up the kitchen, we have to take care of our kids, we have to go to jobs, we have to deal with coworkers, we have all these things to do. But that's just the background noise. That's just somebody pounding on the wall. The real question is, who am I inside? And who do I wish to become? You know, pilgrimage is a great adventure because it really helps, but pilgrimage comes and goes. God doesn't. We come and go from God. But he's constant with us. Moment by moment, that's our choice. Who do we want to be? Who am I now? Who will I be tomorrow? Why? Master says, you know, even meditation. There is the power of meditation, is it changes words into experience and experience holds us. But even meditation is a means to an end, which is to remember. always to remember. God bless you.
Forevermore.